Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM. Talkspace.com/boom. B-O-O-M.
No, I'm not for sale.
You are Locked On Colts, your daily Indianapolis Colts podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to Locked On Colts, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Matt Dainley, and we are now officially over with Colts minicamp, the official start of the dead period, but we are alive and well tonight. We got our main man, George Bremer, back on the scoop with us tonight. What's going on, George?
Hanging in there, trying now to cope with what am I going to do for the next 6 weeks.
Yeah, it's going to be, very touch and go, there's just a lot of... everything that now we get to talk about is all just what about this, what if that, what if the other thing. I mean, that's going to be difficult to actually get anything of substance out because there's literally nothing going on between now and training camp.
Yeah, the rookies are going to hang around for two more weeks out at the facility, but that's all closed and we won't hear anything out of there unless it's, you know, really the problem with this period is basically if you hear anything between now and July 29th, going to be bad news in all likelihood. It's going to be, you know, something off the field you don't want to deal with, or it's going to be an injury or something like that. The only good news that I could possibly imagine leaking anywhere in July before training camp would possibly be concerning Andrew Luck if he started throwing a football.
Yeah, that's about right too. Yeah, that's crazy. So we did get a lot of nuggets though out of the coaching staff, out of a couple players and stuff over the past couple days at minicamp though. What was maybe the most there were some things where, and I talked about this on the other show the other day, but Chuck was a little forthcoming with the talk about Hassan Ridgeway's injury and his surgery and stuff like that. But we don't get that a lot from Chuck, and we don't get that a lot from anybody, to be quite honest with you. So, I mean, any of that was a little bit extra, but what was the one thing that you took out of the past couple days and just in general of the mini camp that really kind of perked your eyebrows a bit?
And the biggest thing, and probably this has been talked about a lot, but Dante Moncrief was an absolute monster yesterday.
That's good news.
And, it really showed up. He was everywhere. He was catching just about everything. The one time I can remember him not making a play was because Vontae Davis made an even better defensive play. It was really, I think, eye-opening. Just we always know what Dante Moncrief can do, and obviously, you know, doing it in June is one thing, but it just shows how much he's worked, you know, how good he's feeling after how many games he missed last year, and the potential for him to have a really breakout year. I think it's something that the Colts are, I don't want to say they're leaning on it, but I think it's something that they really want to see happen. I mean, he's in a contract year. He just really needs to step into a consistent spot and, you know, help T.Y. Hilton out by being that true number two option who's there every week. And he talked about it, you know, that his main goal is to stay healthy. And some of that he can't control. I mean, I feel like he got hit with an injury-prone tag, and it's not really that fair. I mean, he got basically speared in the back and broke a shoulder blade, and, you know, there's not a whole lot you can do about that.
Right. Yeah, there's a big difference between being injured and being injury prone. You know, I mean, you know, in all likelihood, I mean, you can look at the nagging type injuries, as you spoke about Vontae a few moments ago. Vontae's kind of, I mean, you could kind of get him into that category just because he's had the little, you know, the toes, the ankles, the fingers, the, you know, the arms, and just little stuff here and there. And a lot of it's been his ankle. You know, injury prone and being injured are completely different sides of the spectrum, that's for sure. There was a lot of talk you know, somebody that we've talked about quite a bit is our guy, Chester Rogers. He's not just a sleeper anymore. This guy is really making moves and is impressing the right people. I mean, Andrew Luck the other day said, you know, basically that he considered what he did last year to be doing some special things. And obviously the talk that he's had going around about him this year, just in the mini camp and the OTAs and stuff like that, it looks like a lot of that's coming back to the surface, and a lot of that's due to his off season work ethic.
Yeah, absolutely. And Chester's been very consistent. And again, you know, the same caveat always applies. This isn't the same situation they're going to be in later. Jerron Carter was outstanding in the spring and the beginning of summer, and then as soon as the preseason started, he disappeared. The difference with Chester Roger and Dante Moncrief, of course, is that they've done it. Mm-hmm. They've done it when the bullets are live. So
right. When
you see something good coming from a guy like that, at least for me, it means a little bit more. It's somebody you can trust, somebody who is tested to some extent, you know, in the regular season. And the thing that I think helped Chester Rogers a little bit this week, too, is that, you know, T.Y. Hilton was down. He had that hamstring tweak from last week. And so at this point in the year, there's no reason to mess with it. We talked about that after it happened,
mm-hmm.
that maybe he would just go ahead and miss minicamp. There's no point in putting him out there. But with him out and Philip Dorsett out, Rogers was the number two receiver this week. And, you know, it's just more reps. It's more chances to get a look. And he continues to go out there and be where he's supposed to be, when he's supposed to be there. I can't stress enough how important that is. It's something that Jack Doyle has absolutely thrived on. The fact that your quarterback can count on you, that your coaching staff can count on you, it means everything out there. And Chester Rogers is becoming one of those guys.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You brought up Dorsett. Is there a bit of – there was an interesting statement from I think – I don't even remember who it was now. I read it quickly, and I got off the page. But it was something to the effect of where one of the coaches were talking about the receiving core, and they kind of were talking about the competition with Aiken and Rogers and Moncrief and Hilton. And they kind of just, you know – talked and talked and then left Dorsett kind of towards the end. Are you getting the sense that Dorsett, I mean, being that he hasn't been able to really do anything, is kind of putting him on the back burner, or is it just that, the simple fact that he just hasn't been out there and there's not a lot to talk about him?
Yeah, I think it was Rob Chudzinski that was doing that, and he mentioned at some other point in that session with us that, you know, Dorsett's gotten to a point where he needs to be healthy. They need to see him out there. You know, they need to find out what they've got. And it's gotten to the point where not being healthy is the problem. That's why he's on the back burner right now. But it's also why there still remains questions. We were talking the other day out there during one of the practices, just us in the media scrum, that, you know, it's not a situation like it was with Bjorn Werner, where you just felt like this guy's really not cut out for the NFL. You know, he lacked the strength. He did have the burst. He was a great college player who just couldn't translate to the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't feel like it's the same way with Dorsett. We know he's got that one trait. You know, that's one thing that Chris Ballard has really, everybody he's brought in, everybody on this roster has some trait that's special about them, and that's why they're here. And everybody knows that speed from Philip Dorsett is there.
Right.
And he just has not consistently stayed on the field, and he has not consistently turned that speed into production when he is on the field. And it's really, you know, it's getting to the zero hour. There's no doubt about that. He's in year three. It's a very, very big make or break season for Philip Dorsett. And to miss time in the spring, it doesn't help him.
Mm-hmm. Now, there was something that I noticed. I did a video of all of his targets the other day and put it on YouTube. And I really wanted to see what it was that Dorsett was doing well and wasn't doing well. And like you said, obviously he's got the speed. He's got the big playability on him. Very much, I mean, and obviously not the polish, obviously, anywhere near it of T.Y. Hilton. But he's got a lot of what T.Y.'s got. And he, for some reason or another, is just not making the plays. There was 11 passes that were not catchable for him. And I believe his catch percentage on the season last year was around 55, 56%. If you take those 11 totally uncatchable balls, that includes throwaways, terrible passes, balls that just traveled out of bounds, just balls too far, just whatever, tipped balls at the line, whatever you want to call them, those that were intended for him, if you had taken those out, his catch percentage would have been closer to 68%. I can't speak on, because I don't know the exact portions of the routes that he's supposed to be running. You know, I mean, if he's running 12-yard and he runs 13, I don't know that one way or the other. But by all accounts, it looks like he's running solid routes. He's able to win. It's just the biggest issue that I saw with his route running in general was that he really struggles to find the sweet spot in the zones. And a lot of that draws defenders. And more than anything, a lot of it's yards after the catch as well. There's not a lot there unless he's got a lot of space. He doesn't create enough space throughout his route for one reason or another. And I can't really pinpoint it or figure out exactly what it is. But like you said, he is down to the nitty gritty here. It is make or break, and there's guys that are playing well enough to take his spot. It's almost sad because, like you said, it's not like a Bjorn Werner or another one of those guys that just don't have what it takes to be in the league or to be an NFL ball player. He does, and he's very much a guy that it wouldn't surprise me at all to see him at some point maybe get cut loose, and I don't mean this year necessarily or anything like that. I just mean eventually at some point get cut loose and then end up being successful somewhere. But it won't be because he wasn't coached right or anything like that. It's simply because he is either not getting something about the position, or he's just, you know, just not being effective, or he's not running the routes correctly or something. But you would assume that with the new wide receivers coach, that as much as everybody's ranting and raving about him, that he would start to progress a little bit more and polish up those routes. But, you know, it's such a coin flip with him anymore. It's just really disheartening almost.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And I think that's everybody's waiting for that light bulb to come on and everything to come together, because the pieces are there, you know, individually. The pieces are there, but like you said, for whatever reason, they're not all coming together on Sundays and adding up to anything. And, you know, some of that's been injury, undoubtedly. Mm-hmm. Some of it, you know, because it's not just the time that he's missed in the regular season. It's the time that he's missed in the off season to work on some of those little tricks and tips and, mm-hmm. you know, the little details that make the difference. I have heard, and I can't remember who said it, and it might have actually been Philip himself, that he needs to get faster getting in and out of his cuts, that's one of the things. You know, as fast as he is, he doesn't get in and out of his cuts as quickly as you would expect him to. So, you know, there's little details here and there, and that's exactly what Sanjay Lal has been working on with these guys. So, you know, I think he's a guy who can really benefit from Lal, but he's got to be on the field. I mean, you can't stress that enough. You know, you're not going to get better at these things unless you're out there doing them every day. And nagging things keep coming up with him. And, you know, at some point he needs to stay healthy and he needs to put it all together, or, you know, we'll see. Who knows, but it probably won't be a good outcome for him if he can't find a way to do those things.
Absolutely. And, you know, there was a lot of talk about Andrew Luck this week, as there is anytime you guys are able to talk to the coaches or to anybody, really. You guys are wanting to find out, can you get a little nugget, a little piece of this or that about Andrew? But I noticed that a lot of what was written outside of Indy base, and some of it was even inside of Indy circles as far as media-wise, but it seems like everybody on the outside looking in is assuming that everybody is just freaking out about Andrew Luck around, and that's just not the case. I just could not figure out the whole point of emphasis about those articles. They didn't make any sense to me at all, because I'm not getting that gist at all. Are you?
No, you know, everything that I've heard is that the plan was always that he wouldn't throw in minicamp, and there's even been some whispers. Nothing coming from the organization, nothing at all that you can hang your hat on. Don't, you know, this is not any kind of reliable news here.
Sure.
But there's been whispers that if he had to throw right now, he could. There's just no point in doing it.
Right.
I don't really sense panic. Like, we talk about you know, a couple weeks ago. Phil Walker's the only guy they added. And
right.
if the team was panicking, if the franchise was panicking, Ryan Fitzpatrick would have been here. Josh McCown would have been here. There would have been some other move. And until that happens, until you see RG3 show up at the complex, or you see Colin Kaepernick show up at the complex, or they try to get Jay Cutler out of the announcing booth, or Tony Romo, or what have you, you know, unless you see him move like that, that would be panic. You know,
right.
to me, that would be freaking out.
Right.
And right now, there's no timetable, but you know there is. And that's the other thing. I feel like every time I write it, there's no public timetable.
Right.
There is a timetable, you know, and they're aware of it, and he seems to be on that internal schedule. They're not going to put anything out there right now because, frankly, they don't have to.
Right.
And
not only
if
that.
If you say he's going to be...
Yep. Yeah. You're on it. You're on it.
You know, if you say he's going to be throwing by July 13th and he's not,
mm-hmm.
it's July 16th, those 3 days will be chaos.
Absolutely.
Until it actually happens.
Yep. As soon as you started to say that, I knew you were getting ready to say exactly what I was thinking. You have all the national media going completely crazy, wondering why he's not throwing, thinking that his arm's falling off. I mean, if he doesn't do it. So, yeah, you're right. They absolutely gain nothing by saying, we're going to have him thrown by such and such a date. That's totally pointless to do. That serves nobody any good. And it's just not necessary right now. Because they're getting by with what they are saying, which is very little. But B, it doesn't take a doctor to figure out that, you know, there's no point in him throwing until then. I mean, not only have you and I talked about it, I've stressed this on the show several times over the past couple months. There is no reason to worry if Andrew Luck isn't throwing until preseason and doesn't play a game. This is not an issue right now. When it's an issue is if you see he's not playing in week one and they still can't figure out if he's ready to go. That's an issue. If they don't play him, it's because they still just want to take it easy on him. But if they don't play him and they still are being very wishy-washy about their what they're releasing about Luck, then you might want to be a little worried. But, man, we are 2 full months here before training camp, and the rest of the country, you know, all the national websites and productions are freaking out. But I'm not in the least bit, nor do I catch that anybody closer that covers the team well is in that boat at all.
I think where the concern lies right now is not so much in when he'll start throwing or anything like that, but how the shoulder responds. I think that's where the mystery is.
Yeah.
You know, once he does start throwing and they put him on those pitch counts, how's he feel the next day? If he comes out the first day of training camp and he throws 40 passes, how's he feel that next day? How's the shoulder respond? How's the strength of the arm? You know, those are the things that are concerns, and there won't be any way to answer those and you know, for at least another probably 6 weeks at the very least, and it's probably honestly going to be longer than that before we really have a good firm deal on any of that. But that, to me, where there is concern, that's where it lies. How does the shoulder respond? How has the surgery taken? But when you talk to Andrew Luck himself, he's very confident in those things. He knows his body better than anybody else. He's very confident that's going to work out and that he'll be all right. Nobody knows for sure, but you know, until we see otherwise, I take him at his word.
Yeah, and he has lost some weight, and he's going to have to regain that strength, and he's going to have to basically start over with his throwing motion. And I mean, it's not like he's going to have to scrap what he knows. I just mean that he's going to have to start over throwing lightly. And let me bounce this off of you, because I wrote this the other day, but I want to see if this holds any weight with you whatsoever. I kind of likened his reformation here of getting back in the saddle of passing after post-surgery here as kind of one of the major league ball players post-Tommy John.
Mm-hmm.
They have to get themselves back in the mix, start from scratch for the most part, learn how to throw without re-injuring their tendon or the ligament or whatever is the issue. But this is a shoulder. It's not an elbow. But it's similar in that he's going to have to relearn how to throw effectively. He's going to have to relearn bit by bit, short passes by further just going down the field a little bit more each day, you know, more reps and stuff like that. And not only that, but he's got Brian Schottenheimer for another year. I just love that guy, man. There's something about watching those two work together last year in camp that really piqued my interest. And the fact that he's going to be in his pocket while Andrew Luck is rehabbing this, eventually whenever he does start to actually throw in bulk, that this is going to be something that is a good thing. Andrew Luck's going to learn to, you know, take those 6-yard passes on first down. And take the 6, 7, 8 yards, whatever it ends up yielding, you know, and not go into the 12th or 15-yard route on first down and throwing an incompletion. I think this is really going to help Luck's game as well. Obviously, you want for him to make sure that he completely heals 100%. You don't want any reason for him to be throwing short if his shoulder's not healed. You know, I mean, that's not a good thing. That's not what I'm getting at.
Right.
I just mean for his progression to go forward, you want to see him kind of take baby steps and then have him have those fundamentals in his head going forward when he actually starts throwing, like you said, with live bullets. So does that hold any water with you whatsoever?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's like, when you go to a baseball game and you watch a starting pitcher warm up, you know, he starts out in the outfield and they move further and further away, and then they go to the bullpen and he starts throwing harder. It's going to be a longer process, but same idea.
Right.
You got to stretch that arm out, and it's going to take time. It's going to be a process, you know, and it's honestly, it's something that could start tomorrow and we won't necessarily know, you know.
Exactly.
They're not going to make a big public show of it, I don't think, because I imagine when he first starts throwing, it's not going to be pretty. It's not going to be something that, you know, people will like seeing. And but that's going to be part of this whole process too. So, you know, to me, one thing that you said that I think is so dead on in there too is they're being ultra careful. They want to make sure that he's 100% before they do anything. The whole point of this surgery was to put this behind him.
Right.
You know, he didn't have to have the surgery necessarily. He could have gone through the same, you know, maintenance program he went through last year. The whole point of this is to not have him deal with that, to let him get back to 100% and be, you know, a normal quarterback, if so to speak, without all those hindrances. And so that, I think that's a lot of where the caution and the timetables and everything else are coming in. They don't want to do anything until he's 100% healed. And who can blame them?
Right. Absolutely. Well, the nation and we have talked about Andrew Luck long enough. We know that that's going to be the waiting game a little bit for now. So let's jump off of that. But something else that we've talked about quite a bit, you and I, because I think this is something that we just enjoy talking about as well, is this offensive line and how they've been trying to shore up that right side. They were talking to Chudzinski yesterday. And basically, he reiterated what a lot of people have been asking. You know, you want to know, is that right side of the offensive line all set and ready to go? Or is that something that's still a work in progress? And obviously, he said that, you know, that right side's still a work in progress. But I think you can argue that the entire line is a work in progress, not so much where people are playing, but just in general. And he spoke on this, and they've talked about this quite a bit, is it's the continuity and chemistry. But I liken those two as somewhat of a conflicting statements there. The chemistry, it to me, is more important than continuity. I don't care who's on that line as long as they play well together. I don't care if they've played together for 2 years or two weeks. Those guys have to find the right mixture of guys at the right positions and then go forward. And then, you know, you played well together and you start knowing the guys to the right or the left of you and things start working out well. A lot of talk about Denzel Good, wondering whether he's a guard or a tackle. You know, going back and forth with that. We've talked about that probably for the last year, to be quite honest with you. And so a lot of this is still the unknown. Are you getting any, you know, silent nods or anything like that, you know, that you think that they may have a little more trust in what they've got right now than kind of what they're lending out? More or less, do they feel better about what they're seeing than how they're saying it or how they're releasing it? I'm not even sure if that makes any sense whatsoever. But
not
just they're trying not to be too boastful about what they feel they've got. In other words,
yeah, you know, they're definitely a work in progress, and I don't think anybody would deny that around the building right now. Stasinski mentioned it. Yeah, I forget exactly the way he phrased it, but he was talking about last year there were things that happened that weren't necessarily acceptable, but they were understandable. And this year they're not understandable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the expectations have risen for where they should be at. The bar has risen, so to speak, for where the offensive line should be at right now. I think they have a pretty good idea of who the starting five is just from watching, you know, how they line up in practice. Now, having said that, Brian Schwenke's been out the last couple weeks. Denzel Good's been out the last couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
They've been keeping Jack Muhort on a maintenance program. He's on a pitch count. He didn't practice at all during minicamp. So it's not 100%, you know, they haven't had everybody there necessarily every day, but every single practice we saw, and again, you know, during OTAs, we only see one a week. So the other two or three days that they practiced that week, it could have been completely different.
Right.
But every single practice we saw, LaRaven Clark was at right tackle. Joe Haig was at right guard. The only time that changed at all was one of the days very early on that Jack Muhort wasn't there and Denzel Good was healthy. Good was at right guard that day, and Joe Haig was at the on the left side. But other than that, the right side never changed. Ryan Kelly, of course, never changed. I don't think it surprises anybody.
Right.
Anthony Costanza never changed. The one interesting thing that we saw was after that first time, after Denzel Good was out, because really the first week of OTAs was the only time we saw Good out there when Jack Muhort was not.
Mm-hmm.
After that, they were both out. Other than Jack was there the second week of OTAs. But what's interesting is the last couple of weeks and all through mini camp, the guy at left guard was Jeremy Vunovich, and he's been a tackle, you know, as far as I've known the entire time he was around. So I don't know if he's making himself necessary is one of Chuck's favorite phrases or what they're doing there. But that's the most interesting development that I saw on the offensive line. Now, when they get to training camp, you know, maybe Denzel Good's going to be a competitor at one of those guard spots. Maybe Schwenke's going to be able to compete at one of those guard spots. But right now, I really think the leaders in the clubhouse are the line that we saw at the end of the year last year, with the exception of Jack Muhort being healthy and being a left guard.
Mm-hmm. And he is in such a critical season right now to get paid. I mean, not only is he a fantastic left guard when he's healthy, but the Colts need him to be healthy. And if he's not this year, man, I mean, there's a good possibility, in my opinion anyways, like you said, I don't, you know, have any knowledge of this firsthand or anything, but in my opinion, if he can't stay healthy this year, he's not coming back next year.
I think he and Moncrief are in the same boat. You know, they're guys that when you've seen them out there, they've done really good things, and there's not a whole lot of question about their talent or their ability, and they're in the final year of their deals, and if they can go out there and have healthy, consistent seasons, they're both going to get paid, and they're both going to probably become fixtures at their positions. But both of them, it's a big year for both of them. I think Muhort's very much in that same boat. And I think that's a big part of the reason why they're being so careful with him right now, much like we were talking about with Andrew Luck.
Mm-hmm.
Why throw him out there with the knee if you don't have to?
Right.
You know, get that thing right, get it well, and get him out there so that when he's out there, he's 100%. I think it's a huge season for Jack Muhort.
Mm-hmm.
He's another guy who we've seen be extremely tough. You know, was it last year, I think, where he went down during a game and there was initial thought that it could be season ending.
Yes.
And he missed like 1 week and came back, you know,
early in the season.
I think he missed the London game. So I think it was week three where he got hurt and that was a game where Austin Blythe ended up starting at one of the guard spots because they couldn't get anybody back in time.
Yeah.
But, you know, we've seen toughness from Jack Muhort. We've seen him fight through things. That knee injury, as I understand, is the same thing that Kendall Langford had that ended his season last year. And it's nothing to play around with. I mean, everybody's well aware of that. And you got to see. You know, anytime there's a knee, I always feel like you got to see what's left. You know, what's the guy like afterwards?
Right.
Those knee injuries very often take a toll. I'm not saying Jack Muhort will never be the same again. You know, we've seen him fight through things. I think he's one of those guys that quite possibly can come back from it. But anytime it's a knee, I just feel like all right, let's see. You know, it's kind of a prove it situation with me. Mm-hmm. And for him, you add the contract year and everything else into it. It's a hugely important year.
Yeah, absolutely. Those, you know, an offensive lineman have such a disadvantage in that regard. The prove it type status, you know, here, prove to me you can stay healthy. God, so I got to prove to you that I'm not going to have a running back dive in the back of my kneecaps. And you know what I mean? There is just so many instances where those guys can get hurt. And it's getting cut. It's linemen, defensive linemen, linebackers diving at their knees while they're blocking. I mean, just so much that can go wrong with offensive linemen. You feel for guys like that. And I mean, it's just, it seems like once you get one of those injuries too, obviously that weakens a part of your leg or wherever the injury is at. And man, it just seems like you can't get a break. I really am hopeful for Muhort, A, because he's a fantastic talent in my opinion. And because, you know, by all accounts, he's a guy that the Colts really want to be that stalwart at that left guard and be, you know, a guy of the future for this offensive line. They're trying to build an offensive line, and they can't do it every 2 years. That's just not a winning way to go. It's just not possible to rebuild your offensive line every 2 years, every 3 years, and expect to get great results. You know, and as far as the right side of the offensive line goes, and just, you know, for my money, I think Denzel Good or anybody else who's really going to try to be battling for those positions has to come in and training camp and blow the doors off of the coaching staff. I think that LaRaven Clark, obviously he's been there, so and Hegg's been there, so they're getting that. They're the guys who are available and being durable right now. But at the same time, like you said, those guys ended the season last year, both playing pretty well. Hegg was a true utility guy for the Colts last year. And you've got Ryan Kelly at center. That's not, he's not going anywhere. The interesting thing to me is Vujinovic, where, you know, where does he go? You know, has he been sitting there? Is he going to sit there and back up Muhort all year? And does it even really matter? Is he going to be the number one utility guy for the Colts offensive line this year? I think that when training camp comes around, just as much as we've talked about him and heard other people mention his name, I think that he's going to be a guy that we see in multiple positions at training camp, and we're talking about him being kind of like the sixth man of that offensive line.
Yeah, they need somebody to fill Joe Wright's shoes. You know, Joe Hague did it a little bit last year. Joe Wright's was always that guy that kind of, you know, anybody went down but the center, and in would go Joe Wright. Mm-hmm. And somehow or another, he'd get the job done. It seemed like it was like clockwork. And, you know, maybe Vujinovic is being positioned in that spot. I think behind the starters is where the real interest comes in with this. You know, Brian Schwenke's got an advantage because he can play center, and so that gives him that backup center spot, you know, maybe a leg up there. But, you know, where does Denzel Good fit in? Where does Jeremy Vujinovic fit in? Where does a guy like Zach Banner fit in? I think it's going to be a real interesting to watch that group behind the starters and how they shake out, because there are a lot of roles there. Who is that sixth lineman, like you said? You know, do they have a swing tackle?
Right.
There are some roles behind the starters that really have a lot of questions.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. We've talked about that several times. I hope that our listeners are just as excited about the offensive line and what we're going to see in training camp, because I know that we've talked about it several times, but it's just hard not to talk about it. It's been something that has been an issue. It's been something the Colts have needed to work on, been working on, trying to get a core five there, and it's hard not to talk about it. So I hope that
One thing that came out of today with Ryan Kelly was, you know, again, it's one of those topics that we've heard a ton of, but he was again talking about how these guys were together so much during the offseason. They were in the building, you know, they were informal workouts, they were all working together, and the bond that built. And he just felt like, I believe he said, you know, from the start of OTAs in April through to the end of mini camp today, he felt like they've come light years from where they were. And he says it's all because of that bond. So maybe the chemistry's starting to be there.
Good. I mean, that's something you wanted to see another year from Philbin to coach in that group, and to hear that these guys actually feel like they've got the chemistry. Man, that's like you said, if he feels they're light years ahead of from where they were last year, and Kelly, now there's a lot of coach speak, there's a lot of player speak that comes out of these pressers, but Kelly, I mean, and you can attest to this, is not a guy who just says something to say something. you know.
No, you know, he was down at Alabama with Nick Saban.
Right.
He knows.
He's not going to blow smoke.
He chooses words carefully.
Right. He doesn't blow smoke. He doesn't just say, you know, the metaphorical phrases that come off, that roll off the tongue. If he says something, typically, you know, he doesn't like to. It doesn't really seem like he likes to talk anyway. So if he does talk, you know, it seems like what he's saying is pretty truthful.
Absolutely. You know, he's a guy who usually is pretty upfront, and if he doesn't want to answer a question, because he won't throw anybody under the bus.
Right.
You know, he'll talk around it, and there wasn't any of that today. And you know, every member of that line has mentioned how much those workouts meant to them at some point during this winter. That and Jonathan Hankins have been probably the two most consistent things you hear from everybody up there at the podium. Every lineman talks about the workouts and the chemistry between them, and every defensive player talks about Jonathan Hankins. So when that happens, you just kind of take note. I think it's, like you said, there's a lot of things that get said that kind of, all right, we've heard that a million times, but when Ryan Kelly says they've come light years, your ears perk up.
Right, absolutely. And, you know, the good thing about that is of note is that those are two really critical areas for the Colts to grow as a team. Offensive line, defensive line, two major needs for next year to really show up. One of the more interesting topics that came up in yesterday's interviews was the talk about the tight end position. Now, reading what was said, it didn't sound to me like it was, like there was a great endorsement from Chudzinski about Swoop being the number two tight end. Is that another one of those cases where it doesn't read like it sounded, or did you kind of get the same idea?
Well, I think they're cautious. You know, one of the things that I think is different this year, there doesn't seem to be as much of a sense of this guy's going to be handed a spot. I don't really want to say that because it sounds really bad.
Right.
But I don't think that they necessarily have favorites unless a guy has truly locked it down. You know, like obviously once Andrew Luck gets in there, he's the starting quarterback, and no one's going to question that. T.Y. Hilton's position is pretty solid. But, you know, there's a lot yet to learn about Eric Swope, and I think that's what was coming through from Chudzinski. It's not that they're not comfortable with where he's been or where he's coming from or where he's going. It's just that you're talking about a guy who, you know, last year got on the field for really the first time, and sure, he showed some things that they really liked, and he's grown tremendously in his time since he came here, you know, from playing basketball at the University of Miami. But there's still a lot left to learn, and now all of a sudden his role has expanded and he's going to be exposed more. So, yeah, you know, there's concern there, as there would be with anybody who's stepping into that role and really isn't proven. I think Brandon Williams, one of the free agents they brought in, has a decent chance to compete for or even open the season as that number two guy. He's more of an inline guy. He's more of a blocker. But, you know, those are the things that they're looking from Swope that I think they're unsure of. They like him as a pass catcher. He's certainly shown that he can do that. There are things that he can do in the passing game that really you like a lot, but he's got to be that total tight end, and, you know, that's still a process.
Yeah, it almost seems like he's the guy that they may just want to tinker with, so to speak. You know, continue to develop him, but use him in those spots where he can really be a mismatch for whoever will be guarding him in select formations and packages. I think that maybe being the fact that Dwayne Allen was shipped out to New England, that it was almost, I mean, and it's so funny too, because like you said, every single thing that's come out of Colts, like it seems like every 3 to 4 sentences since Ballard was hired was competition written in there somewhere. But at the same time, with Swoop being the guy, and I still call him Swoop. I don't know if I'm saying it wrong. I think I am saying it wrong actually, but it looks like Swoop to me and not Swope.
It does.
It drives me nuts. Anyways, it's one of those things where you just assume that he was going to be the number two guy, and it's not because you didn't feel like he was going to earn it or that he couldn't, take care of the competition, so to speak, for it. But I think really with a guy that has his skill set, with, you know, a guy like Jack Doyle, a guy like Williams, who's going to be their burner tight end? Who's going to be the guy that can carry up the seam? Who's going to be the guy that can be a mismatch out in the flat? You know, I mean, that's going to be a hard thing to do. I mean, I don't think Williams has caught 10 balls in his entire career. You know, I just, it's going to be weird. I mean, it was just one of those things. You just assumed that Swoop was going to be the guy.
Well, and part of that is that he's another guy that he missed some time this spring. You know, he was back from minicamp, but he missed some time. And anytime that happens, the coaches are going to get worried because there's only so many Andrew Lux. There's only so many guys out there who can miss time, and you're really not worried because their makeup and their ability is such that they'll probably make up for it. Most guys got to be out there, got to be working at it. And I think that's part of where Chudzinski was coming from because they hadn't had him for a little while. And he is such an important piece of what they want to do. So, you know, there's work to be done. And when he misses some of that time, there's nothing can be done about it, but it's going to cause concern. I think that's only natural.
Mm-hmm. Now, speaking of another tight end, what about Larry Donnell? Did you get to see him?
He had one drop that everybody noticed. You know, he was kind of stretching in the end zone for one and couldn't come up with it. They signed Jeremiah George today, who was one of the inside linebackers who had worked out one of the eight guys who were tryouts. So he'd been around. I think it was a fifth-round pick of the Jets in 2014, and he's bounced around with the Bucks. And I want to say one more stop, Dallas. I think he was with the Cowboys. So they did sign him today, but it doesn't look like anything's going to go forward with Donnell.
Hmm. I was wondering about that because he had that fantastic season in 2014. But you know what? Something else, and it's he had a lot of drops over the past couple years, 15 and 16. But when you look at his catch percentage, it's still better than Dwayne Allen's was. I mean, his he had three seasons of a 68% catch percentage or better, where I think that was one year that Dwayne Allen had that in his career. I think it was his rookie year or last year even maybe. But those were his best seasons, and Donnell had three of those. And not to mention he caught six touchdowns in 14, but man, he seems like a guy who just – he was on fire, and he was the next big thing at tight end. And then he literally fell off the face of the earth, and of course he has to drop a ball in front of everybody today or yesterday.
Yeah, in the end zone too. So, you know, I mean, that's when it really stands out. Now, I don't know. Maybe there's a little bit of delay there. Maybe there's some other things at work, and you know, they've got 6 weeks. If they like what they saw, they can always add them at any time. But it wasn't, you know, today they signed three guys. Like I said, Jeremiah George was one of them. The other two were receivers, undrafted guys. One of them had been with the Packers and played a little bit in the Arena League. But, you know, guys who really don't have much history in the league. And then they got rid of Marcus Leak, which was a little bit of a surprise because he had a pretty solid camp, you know, pretty solid OTAs. But yesterday he was walking around with a wrap on his upper thigh and, you know, missed the end of practice. And you were out at training camp last year. He was out an awful lot of days with injury, and it may have just caught up to him.
Yeah, it probably did. Speaking of injuries, the Colts put Christine Michael on IR inside Tremaine Pope. What happened to Christine Michael? I didn't ever hear anything about him actually having an injury.
Yeah, that was a weird situation. That happened yesterday. It was just a running play, and defensive back came up, I think it was Tyson Graham Jr., and he didn't back off as quickly as you would expect him to, and it looked like they maybe bumped knees. There was some kind of collision. It looked like maybe they bumped knees, and afterwards Michael stayed down, and he ended up going off with the trainers, and, you know, we tweeted about it at the time, but there wasn't really a whole lot to know at that point, and obviously it didn't look good, but you never know. Sometimes it doesn't look good, and they bounce right back, but obviously there was something there, and so, you know, a really short stay on the active roster for Christian Michael.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's – I don't know. I mean, that's too bad. You don't want anybody to get hurt. It's just such a weird thing. I just keep seeing, you know, fourth or fifth running backs getting cut or placed on IR and signed and stuff, and it just makes me wonder that this is just, you know, the due diligence towards the back end of the roster that the Colts are going to make sure that they maintain for stuff just for stuff just like this. So we got to – go ahead.
It was a freak play. I mean, it was just one of those things where, you know, both guys were in the wrong place at the wrong time. And you wouldn't expect something like that to happen on a running play. Normally, you've been out there. Normally, when it's a run, it's sort of an Olay situation, you know, come up and maybe get set up like you make a tackle, and then you move along. Something happened and they collided, and unfortunately looks like that was it. And it's one of those weird things because he was getting some extra reps too, because Frank Gore didn't really work during the mini camp, which is more a function of him being 34 years old and them not needing to put any more wear on him than necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And Marlon Mack has some kind of minor situation going on. He didn't work during the camp either. So, Michael was getting more reps, and it's a tough situation all around.
What can we expect from Malik Hooker? I mean, is it another situation similar to Lux where they just don't plan to even mess with him until training camp at all?
Yeah, they said right away that he wasn't going to go until training camp, but they've been pretty adamant that he will be, unlike with Luck where it's hopeful and praying and all these other words, they've been pretty adamant, and he's been pretty adamant that he will be there right away on I guess, July 30th, the first practice at Lucas Oil Stadium. So we should get a look at Malik Hooker pretty quickly once training camp gets rolling.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear or see something about him. It seems like we've had that, we're not hearing a bunch out of Grover Stewart. We're not hearing a lot, obviously, other than the injury news from Hooker. And some of those other guys, another guy that I haven't heard anything about in the past couple of weeks is Nate Hairston. What's up with him? Do you know anything about him?
He was working on the outside for the first time during minicamp. Every time we had seen him prior to minicamp, he was in the slot, like, exclusively.
Mm-hmm.
And he was working on the outside during camp, so he got beat by Chester Rogers once, but there's no shame in that.
Right.
It'll be interesting to see. I almost feel like, I don't want to call it a redshirt year because that's not really accurate, because I think he's going to be a contributor on special teams no matter what right away.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's their thought process. But I think, he's a guy who hasn't been a corner that long, switched over from wide receiver. I think they do kind of want to give him some time to grow into the role. So I wouldn't expect him to be a major factor on defense yet. And you never know. There's surprises every year. But I think he's a guy that's more of a long-term project. Grover Stewart, however, he's in the rotation. He got a little bit of looks with the ones, but it was kind of odd up front. They were doing a lot of mixing and matching, and it was tough to really tell 100% who was in with the ones and who wasn't. It was one of those, there was a whole lot of maneuvering going on, but there were times where Grover Stewart was out there and the guys that he was out there with were Jabal Sheard and John Simon and guys you expect to be on the first team. So, again, the defensive line's in a boat a little bit, like some of the other positions where there's some key guys not out there. Kendall Langford, didn't work the whole offseason. Hassan Ridgeway had that shoulder surgery. So it's tough to say where he is when everybody's healthy, but at least during this preseason, Stewart's a guy that was in the rotation, and I think he's a guy they want to take another look at. He's flashed a little bit in the rookie camp. He flashed a little bit in the mini camp. Not as much as he did in the rookie camp, but he did a little bit. And I think they're going to want to see what it's like when the pads come on and things go live.
Definitely going to be kicking those tires for sure. A lot of talk about Terrell Basham as well. I mean, they're high on this guy. You can tell they know what they've got, even though they're doing the off-season program with no contact. Basically, they're talking about how physical he is, how he's going to bring violence to the edge on the running game. You can see that basically they said that they think that he's going to be a three-down defender sooner rather than later, I think.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see with him too. I mean, all those defensive guys, all the linemen, you always feel bad for because, this time of year is really not made for them.
Right.
And there's not a whole lot that you can see, but they've been really impressed with what you can judge from Basham, which things like his get off, his footwork, his football IQ, which they really like, how quickly he's picked up on things and how quickly he's been able to take things from the meetings out to the field. All those are positive signs. And right now, at this time of year, that's all you can really hope for. That's all you can really evaluate. So, the areas that he can work on and be judged on have all come up positive. The thing with him is just the depth at the position. It's interesting because you look at it, and they still need pass rushers. Everybody knows that.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have enough pure pass rushers. He might be, you know, if he can develop into it, he might be the one guy really who can beat guys one-on-one consistently without needing any kind of scheme, without needing to be on the right tackle versus the left tackle. But you've got so much experience there with Sheard and Simon that, you know, he's going to have to earn his way on the field. I think he's got a pretty quick route as a third down specialist, but I think even as much as he can do on first and second down, and you see it on tape, I think he's going to have to earn his way out there. And I think it's not a bad idea with those guys who are making that transition from 3-4 to, you know, from 4-3 to 3-4. He's a third down guy. He's mostly going to have his hand in the dirt and do what he's used to doing. It's maybe not so bad to let him develop that way.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think you shut him out there and just say, go play. That's a guy that you don't plan on, you know, that's a guy that you plan on being on the roster for quite a while. And you've got some guys with the experience at the position that you know, it's going to be an open battle, and it's going to be one of the more interesting and fun positions to watch as well. Like you said, you know, pass rush drills are going to be getting 1,000 clicks of cameras right off the jump later on this summer. It's going to be exciting to watch. One of the guys, I mean, and this poor dude, Matthias Farley, he last year, he had probably the most memorable play against Jeremy Maclin, to where he was basically, we've talked about this, and I think we talked about it last week, actually, just briefly, but where he was, he's obviously a safety. He gets pushed into a corner role for the end of the game because they were losing guys, and he had to go up against Jeremy Maclin out of the slot, and they run a simple post corner, and he's toast, and there's nothing he can do about it. But he's a guy who's been really impressing this year in camp, especially right now. And now there's all the talk about TJ Green needing this year to really progress and turn into a player. Farley, apparently, while Darius Butler's not on the field, they said that, hey, he's been the guy running the show and that he's getting the guys lined up. He's good against the run. What's he looked like in coverage?
Okay. I mean, he had an interception yesterday where it was – Mike Adams, like, you know, he was watching the whole play unfold in front of him, and throw was a little bit behind Kamar Aiken. He reached back for it, and he couldn't quite grab it. Becomes a tip ball drill, and Farley dives in there and gets it, and he thought, that's interesting. You know, he's obviously reacting to things well and being where he's supposed to be. But I think the biggest thing with Matthias Farley is he has been the guy to raise his hand. Like, you're talking about that situation with Maclin. Happened in Denver where they ran out of corners and then literally said, anybody, is there anybody who's played nickel, anybody with that experience? And he raised his hand and says, I'll do it. You know, I'll go in there, coach. And that's who he's been.
Mm-hmm.
And he's become, you know, he led the team with 12 special teams tackles last year. He's become a very important part of that special teams package. But he's the guy who's going to go out there and, you know, no matter what situation, Matthias Farley's going to go ahead and say, hey, I'll do it. You know, put me in, coach.
Right.
And you need those guys. And mm-hmm. And I think, especially with the culture that they're trying to build right now with the constant competition and pushing people, Matthias Farley is almost a prototype guy for that in practice, because he's going to push whoever's in front of him. And quite frankly, during minicamp, he was ahead of TJ Green. What mm-hmm. does it mean? I don't know. But it was most of the time, almost all of the time, with first team, Farley and Butler, and then TJ Green came in with the twos. So, you know, make of that what you will, but Matthias Farley's a guy who's going to push anybody out there who's in front of him. And look, we all hope for the best for Clayton Gathers. I don't think anybody denies that.
Right.
Hopefully everything goes well. Hopefully he's able to get back out there sooner than later. But it's a neck injury. You cannot just count on him being there week one. In fact, right now, I think most people are not
right
counting on him being week one. Farley's been playing the strong safety spot. You know, he was up in the box. There's an opening there. There's a chance there. So who knows? You know, it's a long way away. Like we're talking about with Andrew Luck. It's a long way away. But here's a guy who does the right things, you know, in practice, who works his butt off, volunteers for every dirty job, those guys, you always give a puncher's chance.
Oh, for sure. Is there any chance you think that Gethers may end up on IRDR right off the stop, right off the jump?
Yeah, you know, we don't know much. We got to talk to him just the one time, but any time the neck's involved, I think there's a chance of anything. I just, it sounds like, you know, as much as you can read between the lines and try to make guesses, to me, he's the guy that's furthest away of all the injured guys. I think Langford's going to be ready at training camp. Hooker's going to be ready at training camp. I think Luck's going to be ready sooner or later during training camp. But Clayton Gathers is the one guy that I think there's a lot more hope right now than real knowledge of when he'll be back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that it's so scary, man. I mean, not just for his neck, but I mean, when you look at what it means for his career, you know, it's not just that he's not going to play this season. Neck is a situation where you don't know if he's going to play, period, anymore. And that's disheartening, and that's hard to swallow, I'm sure, for him as well as his teammates, because by all accounts, last year when he was healthy, he was one of the best defenders on the field last year, and probably the best defender on the field last year.
You could argue he won two games for him.
Absolutely.
The end of the game against San Diego, he knocks the ball out, I think it was Hunter Henry's hands, mm-hmm. a tight end.
Mm-hmm.
He gets beat, but he recovers and he knocks the ball out. And then, obviously, the last play we saw him make of the tackle there against Tennessee to win that game on fourth down. Those are huge, huge plays. And, yeah, everybody felt like he's going in the right direction. I will say this. Gathers himself seems confident he'll get back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he has said the right things. It's just that next situation, and I know the team, for a lot of the reasons that you were talking about, the team's going to be as careful with him as they can be, because you are worried about not just this year but beyond, and not just football but life in general when it's a neck injury. So he's confident that the surgery worked and that everything's going to go his way, and everybody's hopeful that you're going to see him out there sooner than later, but to me, he's the one guy that you really you have to kind of accept that it could be a long-term deal.
Yeah, I think that it will be too, and I think that like you said, I think that that's the accepted thought process anyways. What about Quincy Wilson? How's he done? He's been, not he necessarily, but it's been a little quiet about him. What did you guys see from him in minicamp?
Yeah, I asked Ted Monachino about him towards the end of his availability because, you know, a couple of weeks ago, we talked to Chuck Pagano, and Chuck said that Quincy, that a lot of the rookies were not in the shape they needed to be in, and Quincy in particular wasn't really where he needed to be yet.
Mm-hmm.
And Monachino very quickly referenced that, and he very quickly said he's made giant strides in that area. You know, he's a really energetic guy out there, even in practice. There's been a couple times where he's made a play, and you know, he's not afraid to go and celebrate with his teammates on it. And it's nothing showy, but it's just, you can see that kind of energy. And he's been moving up the jet chart slowly but surely. He was solidly with the twos during minicamp. That wasn't the case earlier. You know, they really are making the rookies earn it, which I think is the way it should be. And from the way Monachino said flat out, he loves the guy. He thinks they're going to get exactly the guy that they saw on tape. You know, he feels like he's a guy who can stick with the receivers out there. He can do everything you need him to do. He's strong. He's fast. He's physical. He's smart. I still believe that when they go to Los Angeles on September 10th, Quincy Wilson will be a starting cornerback.
Interesting. I always hope for that. But, you know, like I said, you just never know what's going to happen with who and how everybody's going to progress and all that. And I'm all for that. But like we've talked about in the past too, I think they're in pretty decent shape anyways, if Melvin is a guy that they have to rely on for a couple games or whatever. But
and Melvin will make him earn it. I mean,
yeah,
that's,
absolutely.
That's the thing. That Melvin will make him earn that spot.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. He's super physical guy. He's good against the run. He does a really nice job of shedding the wide receivers when they try to block him. Not all, and then, you know what? Speaking of that, with the Colts, that's something that they've talked about. Sanjay, the new wide receivers coach, that he's really impressed on these receivers for the Colts is to get them involved in the blocking game more often. Have you? I mean, without the physicality of the of the practices and stuff like that. Has there been any talk about that, or do they feel like that's helping them maybe transition into this season a little bit, or is it something that they look forward to doing, the majority of the wide receivers? Have they said anything about that?
Yeah, Pagano was talking about it the other day. He said even T.Y. Hilton, you know, they even expect him to get in there and do that from time to time. Obviously, that's not something you're going to do with him a lot.
Right.
Not, you know, but even, that's how far it's gone. Like, even T.Y. Hilton, they're working on and you know, saying, hey, there's going to be certain plays, certain run games where we're going to use you and you're going to be involved. And, I think the receivers accept that. I think it's something that really Bruce Arians did. You know, when he was here, Reggie Wayne talked about it a lot when Bruce Arians was here, that he impressed upon the receivers to go out there and be good blocking wide receivers. And I don't know if you saw the All or Nothing show that Amazon did last year.
I did.
I've been replaying it on Amazon Network, so I've just been catching up with it. But, you know, there's one play out there where Larry Fitzgerald just pancaked a guy on a pass play, I think, because he opened the way for Michael Floyd. But I think that's what the Colts want. You know, you're not going to get that every play, obviously, but it's part of the physicality, and it's definitely something that Sanjay Lau has been a big part of. And I think that's why some of the types of receivers that you've seen them bring in, you know, Kamar Aiken, he's a bigger guy. He's a physical guy. It's something you would expect Dante Moncrief to be able to do, and I think it's something that Chester Rogers is capable of doing, quite frankly. So, yeah, it's definitely a focus, and it's definitely something that when the preseason games get started, it'll be something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the things that as a former receiver, as a former slow receiver, anyways, for myself, one of the things that really helps that people don't really understand is that also helps all around. I mean, that helps everything. If you have guys that are effective run block or blocking for the ball carrier in the passing game or the running game or whatever, that helps everything. That helps the receiver who's matched up against that guy that someone gets, that someone lays out on one play. That helps them get off the ball a little bit easier the next time. The more physical, because cornerbacks are always able to be more physical with wide receivers because they're the ones that are trying to run the routes. When they get to put a hat on a cornerback or a defensive back just in general, that helps everything for the passing game. I mean, a lot more than I think people understand.
No, absolutely. You take the fight back to them, and you just put that in the guy's head. You know, if it makes a corner that much slower, a step slower, you know, coming up, you can use that. And a quarterback like Andrew Luck can definitely use that. So, yeah, you know, and that's what they keep talking about again and again and again with Lau. We hear it all the time. I'm sure you're going to hear it throughout training camp. He's so detail-oriented, and he's so big on the details. And they think that that's going to make a big difference this year. It's easy to talk about in the spring. It'll be really fun to see how it plays out in the fall.
Absolutely. Well, George, as we get ready to wrap this up for our final OTA off-season camp and stuff like that until we get into training camp show, what was something that maybe we haven't talked about yet tonight that has been catching your eye through training camp?
You know, the guy, I'm sure it's out there. I think a lot of people have talked about it, but I don't think we mentioned it today. John Bostic keeps making an impression on these coaches. Mm-hmm. Everybody brings him up. Monachino just did it again the other day. Here's a guy who, you know, his rookie year with the Bears was a pretty good linebacker. He's been dealing with a lot of injuries since, but he may be, I always look at that inside linebacker spot as the most wide open race on this roster. I don't think that's changed, but I think John Bostic has kind of put his nose out there in front in that race right now and trying to make himself the man to beat.
That's interesting too, because like you said, that they've been talking about him a little bit. They said, I mean, they basically love everything about him. They think that he fits the scheme. They love his physicality and stuff like that. But they've also mentioned, I think it was last week's set of interviews, that they were talking about how they feel like he's really impressed them in coverage. Is that is that right? Is it Bostic, or were they talking about Spence?
Yep.
I think it was Bostic.
Yeah, it was Bostic. They said he's a lot more athletic and he can really run, and you know, that he's been impressive in those spots. And that was the question coming in. You know, he was a guy who was a thumper. Nobody questioned that. But it was, can he run? Can he cover? And again, we'll know more about that The list of guys who looked really good in June and not so good in September is a mile long.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's still a long ways to go there. But right now, at this point, you know, in the middle of June, John Bostic looks like a guy who they're really excited about. And, you know, maybe he's going to hammer down one of those spots, and then we'll see who can earn the spot next to him. But, again, that's wide open. So training camp, that could change a lot.
Well, now, with all the competition that the Colts do have on the defense, and we'll kind of stay away from the offense here, unless that you feel that there's one that's kind of flying under the radar here, but what do you think is the best position battle that we should look forward to that nobody's talking about?
It's a good question. You know, I'm a little bit interested to see how things play out at safety. Not so much because, you know, Farley's stuck his nose in there and become a legitimate thing. And not so much because they just signed a guy in Tyvus Powell who was in Seattle and, you know, who knows what he can bring to this mm-hmm. mix as well. But when you get Malik Hooker out there and then theoretically you need a strong safety type next to him, ideally I think it would be Hooker and Gethers, you know, everything equal, everything in a perfect world. But who's going to be that box safety? That to me is going to be a really interesting battle. And can, you know, how does Darius Butler fit into that mix? How quickly can Malik Hooker put his stamp on that spot and earn it and take it? I think the safety position is going to be really interesting to watch throughout the summer.
I totally agree. George, thanks again for joining us today, man. As always, fantastic stuff. Always look forward to getting your insight on everything. Make sure you guys are following George on Twitter at GM Bremmer. George, thanks for stopping by, man.
No problem. Anytime, man.
Always a great time. I know that the listeners love getting your insight as well. Make sure that you guys are following George on Twitter. Make sure you guys are following his work. George, is there any other place besides Harold Bolton they can catch your work?
Nope, just harrowbolton.com.
Okay, make sure you guys are doing that. And I don't do this too often. I often talk about some stuff that I'm writing, but make sure you guys are following Colts Wire, Locked On Colts on Twitter as well. Make sure you guys are following Stampede Blue and Fan Rag Sports. If you guys, in my header there, you guys can catch a lot of my work as well. I don't push my written stuff quite that often on the podcast, but I'd appreciate it if you guys would follow that stuff as well. If you guys want to get some additional insight on stuff that I see or hear or think or just whatever. So it's always a great time talking to you, George. Always a great time with you guys, the listeners. I appreciate you guys all stopping through. Get over there on Apple Podcasts and give us a rating and review. Get this listenership up. It's been fantastic. It's been growing like crazy over the past several weeks, several months. So make sure you guys continue to do that. Also, share it with a friend, share it with a family member, anybody who's a Colts fan. The more listeners, the better, and so on and so forth. So thank you guys for dropping by. And this is our last show for the week, but I'll catch you guys next Monday right here on Locked On Colts.
You are Locked On Colts, your daily podcast on the Indianapolis Colts, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.